All right, we are here. We are Galexis and welcome. Welcome to Masculinity Revealed and Healed. Now, the idea of masculinity, it is generally held as a concept of what it is to be a man, or how a man expresses himself. It has been used as a way to determine how manly a man is. His masculinity, it's almost as if there's a quotient. But actually, masculinity is an energy. It's really not fully a concept with lots of baggage on it. Those are called fat words, those words that seem to have lots of definitions loaded onto them. Words such as freedom and power, love, words loaded down. Masculinity is similarly loaded down. But it is essentially an energy. Both men and women have masculine energies. They have the energy of masculinity. Right? And both men and women have femininity or feminine energy. A woman, anything that she does, would be considered femininity or feminine. Her actions are feminine. Similarly, any actions a man takes are masculine. It's an expression of his masculine energy or his masculinity. Now, the ancients were aware that there is a balance between male and female in all things. It's part of the nature of what is known as duality. Duality means that instead of one, there is two or more. Duality, in its essential basis, the creation of this reality, was all based upon splitting the one into the dynamic of male and female, the masculine and the feminine, masculinity, femininity. These energies then were at interplay in a dynamic way with each other to create and to bring things forth. So contrary to what has been often thought of in traditions, especially religious traditions, creators are not necessarily masculine, although gods are considered masculine and they are considered the creators. There was a co-creation between the masculine and the feminine, and actually the initiator of creativity was the feminine. So the ancients understood this balance, and they also understood that there are four essential functions of energy, and they aligned these functions with what they call the four elements. Now, you know them in astrology or in some ways of shamanic work as the four forces of nature, the four elements. You start with fire, then earth, then air, and water. Or if you're doing ritual, you very often start with air, then go to fire, and then to water, and then to earth. The order of this is not of any significance, but the balance between the masculine and the feminine indeed is. Masculine energies are air and fire. Feminine energies, water and earth. Now, the qualities that men and women find most significant for them by virtue of their choosing a masculine or feminine form to function through is what allegiance or what alliance that they have with the balance of these forces. There are some men who have more feminine energies than other men, and some women with more masculine energies than other women. But essentially, these four elements have an interplay within each of you. The masculine energy of air has to do with concept, systems, and organization. It is the foundation of intellectual activity, of science, of the whole concept of linear thought, of past, present, and future. It's all part of concept. It's all part of a structure of concept, a philosophy. It is something that men are more attracted to than women, even though many women find themselves excelling in the mental conceptual realm. But there is an allegiance, an alliance with men to understand the concepts and understand the systems and the structures. And you'll find that of those who really explore the nature of the mind to figure out all the details, to take it apart and figure out how it all works and what the structures of it are, you'll find that the most detail of this generally comes from male thinking, from men thinking. Fire has to do with a certain sense of movement of dynamic energy. By intention, will, choice, there is a motion of energy that moves into action. Fire has a certain impetus of passion and desire, but it is focused on moving forward, willing to move forward, willing to break free of limitations, to explore, to seek more, always to move forward, to move into more. It's very inspirational. It sizzles. It's exciting. Fire, a beautiful dynamic that is part of the masculine. And as we said, women use it too. Then there's water, a feminine energy of nurturing, healing, a flow, a feeling, of knowing, of being. And then there is earth, a feminine energy of grounding, of connecting, of inner, and part of that inner knowing, that wisdom of practical applied wisdom. Earth energies tend to look at the connection with survival, the interaction with physical plain things, and you'll find it in all routines. In fact, people who have earth strong in their chart can very much enjoy their daily routines, which would drive anyone who is strong fire nuts. Now, anyone who's had their astrological chart done, they've probably been told their sun sign, their moon sign, their rising sign, which are generally the three most important zodiac signs to reflect a person's balance of these elements. But all of you have all four in one way or another. Even if you're in your astrological chart, you have no planets in Earth, for example. You have it as part of your nature. You have to. It may indicate if you don't have planets in Earth or sun or moon signs in Earth that you may not enjoy daily routines. You may feel sometimes disconnected with the physical plane. But it is there. It is not absent. The same goes true for any of you who have in your astrological chart found that you're missing an element. You're not. It's there. But it would indicate that there may be a bit of difficulty with that particular energy. And there would be much more focus on the other three. Now, the masculine energy that we're going to talk about today, the masculinity, is the way that masculinity is defined, the baggage, we might say, that is put on it in your culture. The way it has been loaded down, organized, put into structures with ideas and philosophy to determine what a human being who happens to have a male body is supposed to look like, to act like, to be like, how he must function. And this is our focus today, to reveal those particular elements of his education, his experience, and what happens thereby. The first way we look at it is that in the developmental phase, the childhood phase, it's about survival. And the young boy comes in to great fanfare. So much hope, so much promise. It's a boy. Males have, intrinsically, in your culture, more value than a girl. Right? So it's very exciting because the arrival of a boy in the family, in the household, creates greater pride for the father. It's a greater support for his, in a sense, his progeny, his masculinity. Now, generally, men find out once they have, if they have daughters only. This is not really necessarily true. They don't feel sad that they missed daughters. But the arrival of a boy symbolizes the beginning of what we would call the masculine game. Or as Daniel has put it together in his men's group, the man code. The beginning of it. Right there. So much expected of this boy. Now the boy is taught by the age of 2. Big boys don't cry. The training of a boy is always to explore, to be free, to be aggressive, to have energy, the fire principle, and to be detached from the emotions, the air principle. So if a boy cries, he is perceived, oh, he's a weak, he's a baby. And boys are encouraged to step out of babyhood as quickly as they can. Doesn't look good in the family to have a little crybaby. The boy immediately realizes he must suppress his feelings. He must get a little bit tougher. He finds that out pretty soon on the playground. There are bullies out there. There's a threat of being beat up if he is appearing too weak. And the first establishment in childhood of what we call the pecking order. This is, in essence, the destruction of the free flow of masculinity. The first burden, the first limitation that is put on males. They have to find, through their interactions with other boys, who's top dog? Who's the leader? Who's the scapegoat? It's not a pleasant experience, even for the bully. There's tremendous amounts of fear. It's really scary. When the channel was a little girl, she liked to play in the woods and run, and she was very athletic. Pretty much expressing a lot of her masculinity. And she would go and play with the boys. But there was a mound of earth in the neighborhood. It wasn't very high. But the boys were fascinated with it. And they played King of the Mountain. Now every boy has experienced this to some extent, right? The boys would see who could stay on top of this mound of dirt the longest, and all the other boys would come and try to push him off. And so the one who's channeling us as a girl would go in there and get in there and start pushing and shoving too. And then they would all like turn on her and say no. Even though they were fighting each other, they would become unified. And they'd say, no, no girls allowed. This is not a girl thing. You're just a girl. You don't fit here. This is not your thing. This is ours. Go away. She didn't quite understand it, but then again, she wasn't that dedicated to becoming king of the mountain. It just didn't seem to be that important to her. So, okay, whatever. But it was so important to the boys. They would fight for hours to stay on top of that and beat each other up. This was a typical example that all males have to experience something of this sort, whether it's on the school playground or in some backyard somewhere, of determining who is higher in the pecking order, who's the toughest, who's the strongest, who's the smartest. And it's all survival, it's every man for himself kind of attitude, except, of course, when girls are around, and then, interestingly enough, the boys group together against, no girls. Girls soon learn they are not part of whatever this is. And it's true, females are not part of the pecking order. It's a male thing, determined very early. So many men grow up to be tall, big, strong, muscular. They can work out. They look like they could beat up anybody. And they're still afraid somewhere deep down inside that somebody higher up in the pecking order is going to beat them up. And they hold that feeling. Not that reality, of course, but that feeling somewhere inside, that vulnerability. At some point, boys turn from girls, even those who played with girls or allowed girls to be with them in their play. At some point, as they go into puberty, they withdrew to company of other boys, and they would put girls down. They'd push away. Girls, no girls. Girls would go and hang out with each other. If you look at a typical playground, you would notice that the boys would go and they would play sports. You know, if anything, they'd get a branch and they'd hit a ball and be active and determining who was the most, one with the most athletic prowess. And the girls would sit over together and talk. And maybe talk about each other's hair, you know, or what this girl thought about that or so forth, and what interactions the girls had with the boys. And the girls were talking. The girls were developing social skills while the boys were developing their masculine skills of action. One reason why men are so intrinsically attracted to sports is also because the air quality of sports is that it's a system. It's a system of organization and order, and it has rules. It's very clearly organized around behavior, around actions, not around anything subjective like feelings or intuition or emotional processes. As a boy gets into adolescence, then he must demonstrate his pecking order status by, you know, what girl he dates or what athletic prowess he has, how smart he is, not in terms of academics, because actually girls still pass boys in academics. So it's still considered a little bit too girly. And those boys who are very academic, who are very smart in the academic kind of sense, who are moving more into the air aspect of philosophy and science and so on, They generally have their success later, but at that critical period in adolescence, it is all physical, it is all action. The pecking order becomes much more relentless, much more painful. There's humiliation, public humiliation, if you're too strange, too weird, if you don't fit in. Yes, both sexes go through this. But the pecking order becomes more established. It becomes apparent who has the most money, who has the nicest car as soon as you get old enough to drive. If you have a good car, well, that really puts you higher up on the pecking order. If you are, you know, have athletic ability, that puts you really high up on the pecking order. And so males soon learn what's important is this damn pecking order thing. And much of their energy is focused on that. But the pain of not being high up on the pecking order is that the ones lower on the pecking order are made fun of. They're ridiculed. They're laughed at. If you ridicule, if you're a male, and you ridicule somebody lower down on the pecking order, it temporarily puts you higher up on the pecking order. If you date a girl with high status, i.e. looks, essentially, or popularity, you gain points on the pecking order. But of course, this is a time when boys, having separated from girls, don't know how to relate to them that well. And there are numerous coming-of-age movies. It seems that the genre has never been exhausted, even though the movies are pretty much duplicates of each other over and over and over again, where the boy is shy and hesitant to, and he has this absolute crush on the leading girl, you know, on this popular girl, on this cheerleader, gorgeous girl, always, of course, blonde and beautiful and so on. And she has tremendous poise, which is not necessarily really what happens there, but in real life. But in the movies, it's always a contrast between the idiocy of the boy, where he keeps stumbling all over himself, and he can't talk to the girl, he's tongue-tied, and all this kind of thing. But in many of these movies, the boy ultimately triumphs, and he gets this girl, which in real life, she probably would never pay any attention to. But that's the movies. It's the fantasy of every boy to get high up somehow on the pecking order despite his flaws, despite his weaknesses. This is where boys begin to put on their ego facade. That if they don't fit into the pecking order, they pretend not to care. They create a distance. They hide. And so the motivation to hide becomes a primary motivation for every male. Let's hide any weakness. Let's hide any flaws. Let's hide anything that could be ridiculed, pointed out, laughed at, rejected. Any way that could be made vulnerable, too visible, so that one could be hurt or shamed. It's also here where a boy feels the greatest pressure, in a sense, from his father to succeed, to make his father proud. Where the father wants him to be the ultimate little macho guy. There's also a sense of potentially disappointing his father and disappointing his mother as well. So there's a tremendous motivation to keep everyone from being upset at him or disappointed in him. It's generally very easy just to hide, retreat, make jokes, make light of it, pretend that the pecking order has no value or no significance, where inside there is pain, there's wounding that does not get addressed. Yes, it's a hard time for females too. there is temporarily a kind of pecking order amongst girls. But the pecking order amongst girls generally is oriented to high status male that the girl gets to date. But is not according to athletic prowess or even academic ability. It's generally according to how pretty she is, how good her clothes are, and things of that nature. The young man, as he gets into his later teens and comes to his full height and adult weight, then starts looking at adulthood. He may try to improve his appearance by working out and getting himself physically strong, which is some kind of emotional buffer against that fear of being beaten up. That will never happen, but nevertheless, physical strength translates into confidence. It's a place where a young man finds his way to find his way to confidence, his unique path to confidence. And if he doesn't have a real true confidence, he has learned how to put on an ego facade of being confident. As he becomes a young man, he begins to dream the adult dreams, the vision of his life. And in this young adult period, he will take on this mission, perhaps to become a multimillionaire before the age of 30. I'm going to be a big success. I'm going to be high up on the pecking order. I'm going to make lots of money. Because lots of money puts you really high up on the pecking order. And I will, if I don't make a lot of money, then maybe I'll have a good relationship and have some children, which will show that I still have good sperm. I'm a good man. I'm a good progenitor. The pecking order is really determined by money, essentially. That's why in this chaos time on the planet, as the financial institutions got hit by their own neglect and greed of being higher and higher and higher on their pecking order, they're still there fighting for their top place in their pecking order of the world, right? Men that were lower on the pecking order financially, all over the country, all over the world, having financial difficulties that perhaps they had not had before, having to face that maybe they're never going to be that high up in the pecking order. Money is the big establishment. Now, it helps to be white, all right? It helps to have a certain physique that looks strong. But money is really essentially the most important thing. The second most important thing is really about is your age. At age, around age 42, a man's reached his peak as far as being youthful, vibrant, and energetic in the pecking order. If you don't reach the peak of the pecking order, and really there is no man who has actually reached the top of the world pecking order. There is none. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy that if I get to the top of the pecking order, if I really get so successful, there will never ever be an opportunity for me to be beat up, ridiculed, shamed and humiliated in public, rejected, hurt, and destroyed. I will be free of all of that if I can just get high up enough in the pecking order. There will always be, for every man, always be someone under them in the pecking order and always someone over them in the pecking order. That's just the nature of it. But the perception of where a man is in the pecking order is more subjective than anything by the time he grows up. But he's still hiding, and he still has to have his ego facade on there to protect him. The pecking order is relentless. For sake of a pecking order, a man who does not seem to make it financially, he'll need lots and lots and lots of sex. It kind of makes up for it. He'll go dominate a woman. After all, she's always going to be beneath him in the pecking order, since women aren't even on the pecking order. Men who are sensitive have the worst time, the spiritual man, because the spiritual men have sought balance, and the culture does not reward balance. The culture does not reward balance in a man or a woman. If a man is gay, that really drops him on the pecking order, because he's too feminine. He's considered too much a wimp or wuss, a loser. This pecking order thing also gets a man inspired to take on a family and obligations and play the white knight. Well, if I'm not big in the pecking order of the men in the world, I'm going to be the great savior. I'm going to take care of the woman. I'm going to take care of my family. And even the most sensitive, loving men can fall prey to this and get stuck with burdens and pressures and financial issues. They will have certain problems in their relationships, allowing themselves to then finally be safe and free to emotionally express themselves. We're going to go into the second section on this particular focus, men in relationships and masculinity as it goes in the traditional patterns of relationships. But men's adjustments are not healthy for men. They must make them according to the culture. They're under tremendous pressure to make them. And tremendous fear and terror of what could happen if they didn't. This is the result of shame. Shame is a feeling of feeling flawed, of being a disappointment, of being inadequate, of being a loser, with the potential to fail, being less than others. And so a man is hiding, so he wants that painful, wounding place will not be revealed. Shame is the feeling that one is not divine, that one is not a light being and valuable and worthy by essence of self, but only by virtue of good deeds and good acts. The sensitive spiritual man tries to do good things, be a good man. And while the spiritual sensitive man is a good man, he has this inner conflict, this inner wound that creates dissension for him. What we're going to do at the end of this particular segment is do a healing of this shame. Because if a man can heal that shame or allow that shame to be healed, he can feel safe to step forth, to be free, to be himself, to love, to feel his own empowerment as a light being. So we'll do a shame healing. All right? This is the place where he's pinned down with a stake. Now, admittedly, women have shame too. And women try to enter the masculine business world on the same terms with men. But that's why there's so many issues with men having difficulty with women in the boardroom, in meetings, as bosses. Because as far as men are concerned, like sports, they need to know the rules of behavior. And they don't know where a woman is. Because she's not in the pecking order. It's very awkward for a man to know how to function with women in business. And women try their damnedest to belong to the pecking order, but they don't make it. They just can't. So women will fail. But for women, failure is not nearly as big a thing because they don't have the same approach to pecking order. They go back to their earth, got to get it done. Here, well, got to take another pathway. We got to work harder. The man, when he gets really desperate from shame and humiliation and loss of his job and so on, will go and veg in front of the TV and not even go look for work. Or even commit suicide. It's preferable sometimes for men. The pain is so great. So let us release that pain. All right? We want to release that pain. Men should not carry that pain with them. And women, that pain is there too, in a different form. And we invite both of you, men and women, to release your shame. And now we are going to turn the attention over here to Daniel. He's going to share some of his experience.
Hi. So basically, this is how I went. I was born. I felt extraordinarily separated. I already felt that I had done something wrong. So what did I do? I went into absolute, total, passive resistance. The reason I mention this is because as things unfold, and we're just going to go through a few points in my life, I will show you how this all came to be. The other thing that happened is that based on some experience in another lifetime, I came to have revenge on my dad. He had done something real bad to me some other time, and I felt this was the way to get back at him. He was pretty high up on the pecking order. He was a successful man in every aspect of the life. So I felt that if I stayed low on the pecking order, I could get back at him. So passive resistance was just the way to go. He hated that. Anyway, around the age of 2, I got polio. That was still available in those days. They didn't have vaccines yet. And so I was paralyzed on my left side for about 2 years. Fortunately, I recuperated, and I'm pretty strong and healthy at this point. But what it did, it set the pattern for me to be a weak person. It also set the pattern because I was paralyzed and in bed for a long time in these 2 years from about 2 to 4, for me not to be coordinated. So once I got out into the world and started to interact with the little boys, I was the one that they picked on. I was a bully magnet. They beat me up over and over. And one thing that I developed during that time is the awareness of my environment. I still cannot look away if there's a movement in the side of my vision. I'm continuously looking out. And even though at this point I feel totally safe in my environment, that is a remnant from all the insecurities and the difficulties I experienced during those days. The way I coped with that is that I became mama's boy. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen. I actually turned out to be a good chef. What an advantage. But I did not interact with other boys. I had an older brother. He was pretty mean at times as well. So I became withdrawn and actually socially very inept. I never really learned how to interact and how to be in a man's crowd. Once I went into grade school, I was second to last in the pecking order. There was only one guy that even was weaker than I. A guy knows that he's pretty last on the pecking order when during phys ed you're having a game and 2 leaders will be picked, and then these 2 leaders alternatively pick who goes on their team. And me and the guy who was even lower were always picked last. Many times I tried to avoid to go to phys ed. I would make up excuses. I just hated it. Later on, around the age of 12, my parents felt that it wasn't really very practical for me to be in such a weak and poor condition. So they instigated for me to get some special, they put me into boxing classes. And I actually was able to physically develop and not be a bully magnet anymore. I actually figured out and learned how to stand up for myself. Therefore, I rose in the pecking order to somewhere in the middle. Once I went into high school, I was pretty much in the middle. However, I never really learned how to interact with men and how to be part of a team. That was just something, all my experiences really with other guys were painful and humiliating. I didn't have a violent streak in me, even though underneath it I was very angry. I did not feel that I could play it out. I hated confrontation because, as far as my memory was concerned, every time I ran into a confrontation, I turned out to be the loser. So whenever some situation arose, I would just shut down, withdraw, and go on my own. Just avoid it. All along, though, I had this image of being very above it, kind of snobbish about the whole situation, so I didn't have to deal with it. As I grew up further, because my dad was high on the pecking order and we had decent finances, I had decent wheels for what was then in Switzerland. I got a motorized bicycle. That was pretty cool. I was kind of smart and intelligent. I knew how to endear myself to the in crowd. So I was kind of their servant. Whenever they needed to have something done, they would call on me. In Switzerland, you'd go on a kind of a ski camp once a year. During ski camp, I would massage the tired legs of the other guys, and they really appreciated that. So they treated, even though I wasn't part of the in crowd, they treated me well. However, I still was very awkward and unbalanced in my physical beingness as far as sports. So still, I was picked last whenever there would have to be a team. I graduated, went to hotel school where I did pretty well because I was smarter than most of the kids. I originally wanted to become an engineer. I had learned. However, at one time during school, I was reading old German language and I kind of got stuck and I asked the help from the teacher about what this was that I couldn't decipher. And instead of answering me, he humiliated me for not knowing what I was supposed to know. See, one thing that men have that is really, at least it played out for me that way, is that I never could learn something. I was always supposed to already know. So there's like no grace. And so I became a real poor learner. This particular incident kind of did something in my brain whereby I started not to be able to track the word on a page any longer. My eyes would shift around, and so what I was reading didn't make any sense to me anymore. So once I went to engineering school and I had to learn from books, I realized that I couldn't do this. Until then, I was able to, by having a very, very good memory, I was able to just make it. I graduated somewhere in the middle, nothing big and extraordinary, but once I had to go and learn on my own, it wasn't feasible. So I went into a vocational school again, where everything gets demonstrated and where I could have good grades. I then left Switzerland. I went to a hotel in the Bahamas, and because the night auditor quit, I had to work double shift. I did not know that I don't have, somehow never occurred to me, that I don't have the physical stamina, that if I don't sleep well, I don't function well. So being on double shift 7 days a week for 6 weeks, I started to have nightmares. I did not know how to go to my boss and say, look, this doesn't work out, because that would have been, in my view, confrontation. So I went to a doctor and I got a script for sleeping pills and I slept for a week. The hotel did not take kindly to that. And so when the next opportunity came for the renewal of my work visa, then they saw to it that the visa was not renewed. So I had to leave my employment without them even having to fire me. I came to this country where I made it pretty well initially. I realized very soon, though, that I did not fit into the mold of being able to work in an organization. I just didn't want to have a boss, because that would way too much open me up to the possibility of failing. And in the masculine psychology, failing is the equal to being a failure. And, of course, I did not want to be a failure. So I managed to use my talents and I became self-employed. For the most part, it worked pretty well, except that I did not know how to market myself. I did not have the social skills from all the stuff that had come in the past. And so I did get some jobs, but financially it was very marginal. I never really fit in. I did not have a concept of the pecking order, because I was too ashamed to look at it based on my accomplishments. Also, now I don't remember what I wanted to say. All right. Later on, it was really interesting. Later on, it actually dawned on me how I was inside this pecking order. And about 5 years ago, we were traveling through the country in an RV. I decided that all of a sudden, I had this whole gestalt and how I just fit in and how I'm just a cog in a wheel and I'm part of a mechanism. And so I decided I was going to get out of that pecking order. And I went on a meditative activity where I kind of gave this hierarchical system the slip. It was really interesting, because for about a week, whenever we'd go out in some public place, these men who normally would never pay attention to me at all came to me and almost curtsied and reverently greeted me. It was so bizarre. That also disappeared. But at this point, I'm thankfully out of it. I don't suffer from it anymore. I will talk about what my life is more in the third segment. And in the second segment, I will talk about how the relationship between Ginger and I played out when we had arguments, so that you can get an example of how this all played out. But for now, I'm going to hand it back to Galexis, who will take it from here.
Thank you. All right. Yes, thank you, Daniel. So you see the journey that a man has to go on to handle this incredible pressure. One thing we would like to add to what we had said earlier is that the sense of hierarchy, which is another form of the pecking order, can be in small organizations and large organizations. Every organization with a whole bunch of men in it is going to set up a pecking order. Anytime a bunch of men get together, there's a temptation to set up a leader and determine the jobs and functions of every man so that everybody knows just where they are at in the hierarchy or in the pecking order. And in your culture, this has been codified into what we call institutions. Institutions such as religion. There's a pecking order there. If you look at the Catholic Church, it's a very good example. You know, you've got the Pope at the top, and you've got, you know, the lowly parishioner at the bottom. But you've got, like, priests in there, and then you've got, you know, bishops, and you've got et cetera, et cetera. And there's a whole hierarchy going up. You can see it in the military, which is a very obvious masculine system with rules and regs and system and order and hierarchical positioning. And so every man is at the mercy of the man above him, who's at the mercy of the man above him, and so on, until you get up into the five-star general, and then even he is at the mercy of the president, you know? So it's like there's no guy is ever the real, true top dog, you know? And if he dares pretend that he is, he gets canned, as you probably saw fairly recently. He thinks he could step outside the rules. Oh, nope, he's going to be put in his place, right? So the military, all sorts of ranks, and you step up from one rank to another, to another. The military, religion, education has it. You know, if you don't have a certain, you know, classes and so on, you don't benefit for this degree, and this degree determines certain jobs that you get in the world, and particularly in other educational institutions. You've got to have degrees from educational institutions. And institutions are very self-fulfilling. They tend to keep those pecking orders alive, those hierarchies alive. All philosophies, corporate organizations, all are hierarchies. You can find it in government, you can find it in law, you can find it anywhere. Now, one of the exciting aspects of this time and place on the planet is that we're moving from a society, it's in breakdown, if you've noticed, a society that's based upon all of these hierarchies. And medicine is another one we just wanted to mention. But if you notice that they're, in a sense, beginning to get dismantled, they're beginning to get compromised. And part of that is so that the rule of law and the rule of hierarchy can be healed. A new reality is coming. You and as individuals, as individual men and women, are learning how to create a new reality which is based on love. Love and equality. All right? So as you get love and equality, the pecking order will diminish and eventually no longer have significance. It will free men in particular to be themselves, to do what serves them, to do that which gives them joy, rather than always having to adhere to a pathway that's going to give them the requisite success so that they will have the requisite value and the requisite significance to avoid being a failure and avoid letting people down, being able to be someone of significance themselves. So all of this whole system, as we said before, based on maintaining the fear of being shamed, the fear of being humiliated, the fear of losing one's job, and i.e. one's value, losing money, i.e. one's value, to that fear, incredible fear of loss. It's all related because underneath it all, the man has been programmed to believe he's just simply not good enough. He's not okay, and he must hide it by all means. And so that shame released can begin this freeing process on an individual basis, which will also have impact on the world. And more men are beginning to step up and to face that fear of failure, that fear of shame, that fear of touching into that wound, of feeling that inadequacy and that pain that is there, that self-rejection, that self-hatred that comes with it, to be able to free themselves from that and to step forth as empowered, loving, free human beings to share their gifts, their light with the world. So let's do a little shame release, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. Every one of you could use it. So just let yourself get in a state of as comfortable as you can. There you go. And close your eyes. We're not going to go deep. This is a process where you feel, you think, and you want to be present. So we're not going to relax you too much that you could fall asleep. We want you to participate in this. It's a visualization. What we're going to do is start out with you visualizing the self that you were as a child and the feelings that you had when you were a child that you had to cover up for one reason or another. If you were a man, the fear of being beaten up, the fear of being seen as a weakling, to be at the bottom of the pecking order, to be the last one chosen for the team. For girls, the shame is not in behavior or doing, but that you're not supportive enough or caring enough. So let yourself just be aware of that. If you were a boy, you can feel that there was a pain in there. Perhaps mommy was disappointed in you. Perhaps daddy wanted you to be stronger and more. You tried hard, but you feared that you would fail. You've avoided that feeling. It's still in there. Just touch on to it right now, knowing that it's time for it to go. But acknowledge the pain that's there, the wound. Remember your adolescence, when what your peers thought of you was of supreme value. The fear of visibility, the fear of being vulnerable in public, that you would do something stupid, put your foot in your mouth, stumble, be an idiot, embarrass yourself, be ridiculed, rejected, left out. And remember that pain, remember that fear. Remember what you did as your adjustment, how you hid yourself, what ego facade you put on, since everyone puts a facade on, you did too. Would you withdraw and be the smart one, and would you judge? Would you judge that pecking order? Would you judge that culture? Oh, they're so superficial, or they're so stupid, or did you rebel? Did you run away? Fears of confrontation, fear that you would lose. Remember that fear. Remember the pain, the embarrassment, the fears of visibility, that if you would open your mouth, you're going to make a fool of yourself. You're going to be caught with your pants down. What did you do? What was your mechanism of adjustment? Did you become the class clown? Did you try to overachieve to compensate? And then in adulthood, what were your dreams? of success. Dreams that you have not fulfilled and probably never will. All that money you're going to make, all that success you are going to have, all that happiness you would find, the adventures, some of which you may have experienced, but somehow along there, the question of your worth, your value, whether you were even worth loving, the pain of being rejected and hurt, of relationships lost. Touch into that too, knowing that it's time for that to go too. Because maybe you thought that it was just you, that there was something wrong with you, that maybe you just never could get it together. You were just a failure. You were just a nothing, low in value. And you had to do the best you could to cover it and never, never admit it was there. Never, ever let anyone see it. Never, ever let anyone close to that painful place because they could stick a dagger in it and wound you mortally. Touch into that place too. This is the impact of shame, where you never felt your divinity, could acknowledge it, could acknowledge your own creative flow, your own imagination, your own way of being. But you had to fit in or rebel against the fitting in. You were not free, and there was a wound always there, festering deep under the surface, that wound, the wound of shame. That wound was initially given you by your parents or guardians. So in your imagination now, just imagine that you are standing and in front of you stand your parents. Doesn't matter if they're dead or not. If they're both alive, great. But imagine them there. You're seeing an image of them. These are the parents who thought they were going to raise you. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they had, the father had run away or whatever. Or maybe they're your adoptive parents. But these are the two you said, okay, these are mother and father. These are my mother and father. And from both of them, you got a heap of shame. The disappointment from your mother and your father by their behavior, a judgment of you. Maybe they didn't care and know how to love you, but you didn't know that. You thought maybe you weren't lovable. You thought maybe you were the unvaluable, not valuable one. See these two parents here, and even though they tried the best that they could, they too suffered from shame from their parents. From older siblings, from older children, from authority figures, teachers. They too suffered. But it's time for you to give back to them what they gave you. It is not appropriate for you to carry the shame that they put on you any longer. So now take all of that wound, all of that sense of inadequacy, all of that sense of nothingness of you. Take all of that. And in your mind's eye, put it into a bubble in your hands. Just pour it out of your body into your hands and make a ball of it. Maybe it's not a bubble per se, because that seems to be fragile and light. Think of it more like a ball, maybe even a heavy dark ball, maybe even like a bowling ball. A bowling ball, heavy, heavy, dark, thick, compact. Make it into a ball, a heavy ball of pain, of inadequacy, of worthlessness, of unlovableness, useless, valueless. Inadequate, failure, loser, stupid. What other judgments can go in there? And that pain itself, the wound itself, put that wound in there. That didn't come with you in birth. Okay. Make it really nice and heavy. Okay. You're barely able to hold it. It's getting so thick and so heavy. And now just kind of touch it and pull it, and it's going to divide into two balls, one in each hand. Same composition, just two of them. Now give them to your parents, one to your father. Thank you, Dad. It's enough. Here, this is yours. And he takes it and he looks at it. You give it one to your mother. Here, this is yours. And as they hold it, feel within yourself that it's all out now. There's maybe a sense of space or emptiness in there. Don't try to fill it up yet. But it may be in your solar plexus, maybe in your heart. There's a hole where there had been a wound. Now, your parents looking at this, holding it, well, it's not theirs either. They got it from their parents. And suddenly you notice that behind them stand your grandparents. You may not have even known them, or only known one or two of them, but your grandparents are standing there, each pair behind each parent. And your parents turn and give the balls, now divided into two, to their parents. Here, this is yours. And then behind them spreads a mighty crowd. Your ancestors, as your grandparents turn and give the weight to your great-grandparents, who turn and give it to your great-great-grandparents. And you just stand there and you watch. You watch each set of parents going all the way back, clear, and give the shame to their parents. Back it goes, like begins to go faster now, like a ripple. Ancestors, you have no idea who they are. Going back down into eternity, back into ages and ages. There are thousands there, going back, way, way back. You can't even see the end of it. Sending it back, sending it back, sending it back, sending it back. Ripples, it becomes a wave. You can just barely see that there's a wave now happening. A wave. And you can see it in a sense because there's a place where the darkness, i.e. the shame, shifts. And it seems that it becomes light, that there's more light around you and your parents and your grandparents and great-grandparents. And you can see it's almost like a wave of light moving. Moving as the shame is passed back, further, further, further. It begins to move faster in a sense, just like a slow rippling wave. A wave of an ocean. Back, 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 back. Until it's lost to sight, and all that you can see is light. It's going all the way back through your biological inheritance, through all the genetic codes that have been twisted, torqued, and distorted into shame. Yes, you inherited it in your DNA. It's going back, though. It's clearing out your DNA all the way back. Eventually, there are fewer Eventually, there will go to only a few. But you don't even see that. All you can see is that this wave of light is moving beyond your vision, out into your world. And let this wave of light go into your world. This wave of freedom. Freedom from shame. The energies of all the DNA comes back to the original ones, so that everyone on the planet now is beginning to feel a freedom in their DNA. Send this light now. Let it continue as a wave around the planet. Moving around the planet. And as it moves around the planet, feeling the sense of expanse of light and freedom, forgive yourself. Have compassion upon you. You had to take on the shame. You didn't have a choice, or it did not appear to be so. You were too young to be able to object. It was just the way it was. Do not hold it against you that you've held that wound in there, or the remnants of that shame. Acknowledge you did the best you could. You could not have done better than you did. You just could not. Because all your choices, as your parents' choices, as everybody's in your families, your siblings and cousins and everyone, always made a choice based on what they thought would feel better for them. So forgive yourself. You made that choice too. You protected yourself, enabled yourself to live, to be here now. So, give yourself permission to be okay about having had to hold that and work with that shame and nurse it and hide it. You're free now. Give yourself permission now to acknowledge that you actually have value intrinsically as a light being, as a human being. That you are a loving person by your nature. That you are free to make choices for yourself. And that you are loved by the divine. Let yourself sense above you a starry sky. Hundreds and thousands of stars twinkling at you, loving you, each one a consciousness, you a spark of consciousness, you a star as well. And let us send a beam of light down to you. Let us, from all the stars that we are, gather our lights and send you a beam of light. Let yourself receive a beam of light around you, so that when it reaches you, it's a column of light. Let us touch you this way. Let us remind you, as we touch your heart, as we fill in those holes where the shame was, let us remind you, you're a spark of consciousness. You're a divine being. You are loved. You're valuable. You're of infinite worth. And you're here on a mission, a divine mission. You're greater than you know. Let yourself just soak it in. The idea that you are divine. The knowing that you are divine. Let it drench you. Let our light drench you with this knowing. You're forgiven. Let yourself heal now. The light has been sent out to the world to heal the world. And it is done. Let it yourself now bring that sense of lightness back with you. And let yourself open your eyes. It has begun the clearing of the wound, the healing of the shame. We will continue In what, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. So for now, farewell, dear one.